And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blast-off. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
Well, it is 6 minutes after 11 p.m. here on Sunday night. It is February 28th, 2016, program 56 of the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. Lisa Wolf is to my right. What's up, Lisa?
Hey, Carl, how
are
you?
Did you cut your hair? It looks shorter. Or you have it in a bun or something like that.
It's just a ponytail.
Oh, it's in a ponytail. All right.
What did you call it?
It's in a bun, like you're back in... You have it in a bun.
Yeah, okay.
A bun could be fun. It rhymes.
It could check out on... Yeah. Luckily, we're not on television here.
No,
we'll go with that.
We're not. This is the WGN Radio Theater here Saturday and Sunday nights from 11 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning. We play all your favorite classic radio shows. And tonight into tomorrow morning, we're going to tune into The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe. We'll have the Screen Director's Playhouse and then the Charlie McCarthy Show. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor will star in the reimagining of the 1977 Disney classic Pete's Dragon about the bond between an orphan boy, Pete, and his best friend, Elliot, who just happens to be a dragon.
All right, if they know who it is, what are they
going to
win?
They are going to win a double prize tonight. We have a pair of tickets to the Chicago Flower and Garden Show, and we have a $50 gift card for Bistro Wasabi.
All right, Bistro Wasabi, who are in tonight? We're going to have some sushi in a little while. We're going to talk about Bistro Wasabi at 2 locations, and we're going to give away a $50 gift certificate. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor starred as Roy Hobbs in a very famous baseball movie released in 1984.
Made it a long time ago when I was a kid. I wanted it to be a very special bat.
How about this lightning bolt?
The tree that I made it from was split open by lightning.
All right, call us 312-981-7200. Name that celebrity. We'll find our winner after this break.
We are back with show 56 of the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
Made it a long time ago when I was a kid. I wanted it to be a very special bat.
How about this lightning bolt?
The tree that I made it from was split open by lightning.
We have Aaron on the line from Schaumburg. Hey, Aaron.
Hey, how are you doing?
We're good. We're so glad you called in, and we're hoping that you know that celebrity.
I sure do. It is the one and only Robert Redford.
You are absolutely right. Aaron, you are a big winner tonight. You have won a pair of tickets to the Chicago Flower and Garden Show running March 12th to March 20th at Navy Pier. And you can go to chicagoflower.com. And we have Bistro Wasabi right here in the studio. You've won a $50 gift card. There are two locations, Lake in the Hills and Hoffman Estates, and you can check them out at thebistrowasabi.com. I hope you love Japanese food.
I love any food.
Oh, I'm with you. Congratulations, and thanks so much for calling in, Aaron.
Thank you so much as well. I appreciate it.
Thanks,
Aaron. Appreciate it. All right. Before we tune in to the first portion of The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, we're going to give away another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. And to do that, the CEO of Cat's Pride, Dan Jaffe's here. What's up, Dan?
Hi, Carl. Thanks. Hi, Lisa.
We talk about you all month. Every hour, every day, every Saturday, every Sunday. We got so excited for Dan Jaffe to come in the studio and talk about your premium cat litter products.
Excellent. Yeah, and we're very excited. We're actually launching what we're calling 3.0, which is the third generation of lightweight litter. As you know, we invented lightweight cat litter 4 years ago, and we're now on to the third generation. This newest one is Cat's Pride Fresh and Light Ultimate Care. And it is using our lightest density minerals. So you get all the fills. You know, the consumers use it by volume. They fill to a certain level. But because it's the lightest minerals, it weighs only 10 pounds, whereas the competitors weigh up to 20 pounds.
Right. So you get the same amount of use half the weight.
And all the performance. Clumps hard, low dust, low tracking, great odor control. Everything you would want in a
hypoallergenic.
Hypoallergenic, you got it.
That's how many syllables, Lisa? Hypoallergenic. Three?
Hypoallergenic. Six.
Wow. Nice. Okay, twice as many as I thought. And
I was going to make it.
So, Dan, you have something really special come. We have a big campaign starting on television in March for this new product, right?
Right, and I thought it was apropos that my favorite radio series was always Suspense.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to keep the listening audience in suspense. This is a commercial well calculated to keep you in suspense. And that I can't really unveil who we've signed
a
long-term
star.
Partnership with. But next month, when I come back to give away another year's supply of cat litter, we'll unveil it. And my challenge for you guys is if you could make our celebrity the answer to the celebrity scoop, that would be a double win.
So for you, Dan, I'm on the job.
So a month from now, when we give away another year's supply of Cat's Pride Kitty Litter, we will unveil who that big mystery star is.
Exactly.
Can you say if it's an alien or a man or a woman or what?
I'm giving no hints whatsoever.
No hints, okay.
To keep this difficult. But I will tell you that we've signed a long-term partnership, and he or she is committed to reducing the cruelty to companion animals, which is something we're very passionate about. I've been on the board of the Anti-Cruelty Society here for 19 years. And so we really hit it off. And so she or he is totally on board. And we're going to be together for a couple years. And he or she is going to be the face or voice of Cat's Pride Cat Litter.
All right. And that campaign starts in March, mid-March?
March 15th. All right. It hits the airwaves.
Ah, so look for national television commercials for Cat's Pride Ultimate Care with this new mystery star.
Can you talk about your new packaging?
Yes, it is in the green jug. So we want everyone to look for the green jug. And so the TV commercials are very humorous. Let me talk about them a little bit. Our celebrity plays a therapist, and you think that he or she is trying to help a couple out, and the couple turns out to be a pet owner and their cat. And their issues are always revolving around poor performance in the litter box. And so our celebrity solves the problem by recommending Cat's Pride Fresh and Light Ultimate Care. And then you see a graphic of the jug, and the voiceover is look for the green jug. So consumers, you'll recognize the celebrity. And then if you can remember, look for the green jug when you go to the aisle, you'll find the product you're looking for.
Right. And if you have a cat, there is no reason to not use Cat's Pride Ultimate Care. Because it is, it's the best kitty litter, plus it's the lightest kitty litter.
It is, and once this is unveiled, every purchase, we will make a donation to this celebrity's foundation. So
To help cure the problem of cruelty to animals.
Exactly.
Yeah, it
right.
helps that. All right. Very, very good. So it's an all-around win-win.
Absolutely.
This campaign. Okay, so it's time now to give away a year's supply of Cat's Pride Kitty Litter to a lucky listener to this show, right?
Absolutely.
All right, drum roll, please.
Yeah, do we still?
There we go.
Here we go. Stick your hand in there, Dan. Grab a name.
I have one. Tim Remington. His cat, Caruso, they are the lucky winners from Freeport, Illinois, Tim Remington.
All right, Tim Remington, congratulations. You're going to get a year's supply of Cat's Pride Kitty Litter for Caruso, who was a singer, right? The great Caruso, right?
That's what his name. Great voice.
Yeah, very good. Oh, well, Dan, awesome. We appreciate it, and great to see you, my friend. And thanks for coming down and giving away another year's supply of Cat's Pride Kitty Litter. We'll see you in a month.
Thank you so much. We really love our partnership with the WGN Radio.
And we love having you here as well.
So great to have you here. Thanks, Dan. All right, it is time for The Adventures of Nero Wolf. It starred Sidney Greenstreet as Rex Stout's gargantuan gourmet. It first aired April 7th, 1943, came on the air, and then it went off the air in 1950. You remember Sidney Greenstreet from the Maltese Falcon movie? He was Casper Gutman. Well, he did a great job on the radio as Nero Wolf. So let's go back to February 23rd, 1951, for the case of the malevolent medic. Here is part one of Nero Wolf.
Ladies and gentlemen, the ringing of that phone bell brings you mystery, adventure.
Nero Wolf's office, Archie Goodwin speaking. Who? Mr. Hal Horton, United Industries? Oh, I see. Well, I must warn you, Mr. Horton, Mr. Wolf doesn't take kindly to big industrialists. Says their great wealth upsets his digestion. Why do you want to see him? The connection's bad. I don't hear you. Who? Mr. Horton, who? We're cut off.
What is it, Mr. Goodwin?
Mr. Hal Horton called.
I understand that. I won't see him. Tell him what money I have to invest I put into orchid plants.
Mr. Horton wasn't promoting anything.
Then what did he call you for?
The great Horton needs a detective. Maybe just my occupational reflex, but I thought he said somebody'd been murdered.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's that genius who is the bulkiest, balkiest, most ponderous, and most brilliant detective in the world. Yes, none other than that chairborne mass of unpredictable intellect, Nero Wolfe, created by Rex Stout and brought to you in a new series of adventures over this NBC network in the person of Mr. Sidney Greenstreet.
It turned out that what Horton had said had been murder, which became celebrated in the case of the malevolent medic. But its solution wasn't a simple matter of following up his accusation. It had false clues mixed all through it like raisins in a pudding. The man we came to know as the malevolent medic was young Dr. Benjamin Sloan. The case began on the sunny afternoon when Grace Banks, his nurse, came into his private office.
Waiting room's finally empty, I take it?
Well, there's one more patient, darling. I'm sorry, doctor. Mrs. Horton's here for another of the thiamine chloride shots you ordered for.
I said you could give her those, Grace. She doesn't have to wait to see me.
Oh, she's hung up her mink coat, parked her orchid and her alligator bag, and filled up all the ashtrays with lipsticked cigarette stubs. Mrs. Horton prefers to wait for you. She seems very upset.
I hoped she'd get hold of herself.
Mrs. Hal Horton, with all that money. Whatever gives her such jitters? Darling, if I ever get in that condition after we're married, please shoot me.
I've advised her to go to a specialist. Hers isn't a true medical case. Well, I'll do what I can. Get a needle ready, will you, Grace, and show Mrs. Horton in.
Yes, darling. I mean, doctor. Mrs. Horton, will you step in now?
Been in that waiting room for hours. Ben, I wrote you every day this week. Why didn't you answer me?
You say your health hasn't improved, Leslie.
I'm worse, much worse.
Still chain smoking, drinking, and the sleeping pills?
I have to take something. I can't walk the floor all night, can I? Thinking.
Why are you so unhappy, Leslie? You have what you always said you wanted, money, clothes, excitement.
You have the right to say that. But don't, please don't.
I'm only pointing out facts you should face. I told you from the beginning you need a nerve specialist.
I need you. Nobody else can help me at all.
Leslie, you went over this the last time you were here, and in all those letters you've been sending. Now, let's cross it off for good, shall we?
Don't talk like that. You don't mean it.
I'm no longer a lovesick dope, and you're the wife of one of the biggest industrialists in the country.
Yes, Hal Horton. I despise him. He thinks his money makes him God. He thinks he can buy anything that he bought me. He made me think I was getting the world with a fence around it. Everything I want is on the other side of that fence.
You don't know what you do want.
I want us the way we used to be, happy in love together.
Leslie, please be quiet.
Why?
Miss Banks is in the laboratory. She can hear you.
What of it? I'm not ashamed. I'll tell her. I'll tell everybody. Imagine Hal's face when he finds out I'm leaving him. But I'm coming back to you. He already knows about you. I told him you were in love with me, that you're jealous. He doesn't like
it. Leslie, you're raving. Now stop it.
You always said I was the most attractive woman in the world.
You made your choice. Now get this into your head. I'm really in love now. In a few weeks, I'm going to be married. Now I'll get your medicine.
So it's really true. You are going to be married.
Yes.
I'd heard it, but I didn't believe it. Going to marry a nurse. All my friends have known and been laughing at me.
Please, now that's enough.
I made a plan, a wonderful, beautiful plan about us. Ben, you love me. Ben, say you love me.
Mrs. Horton, that is all over.
You don't love me.
No longer. You're here as my patient, and that's all. After this treatment, I must ask you to get another doctor.
A wonderful, beautiful plan for us. And now she threatens to step in and spoil it. Well, maybe I'll spoil a few plans. How would you like that?
Threats will accomplish nothing.
I can ruin things for you, Ben. All those fancy ideas of yours about having a fine practice, being a great doctor. Do you want to give those up? I can arrange it so that maybe there won't be any wonderful future for you. Are you prepared to face that possibility? Because I'm prepared to make it a reality. And I mean it. You'll regret this day as long as you live.
I'll get your medicine, Mrs. Horton.
Hand me my bag. Thank you. Oh, I hate you, Ben. I hate you both.
Sorry to have kept you waiting, Mrs. Horton. Miss Banks had to do a repair job before she could use the sterilizer. Alcohol, Miss Banks?
Yes, Dr. Sloan. Now, Mrs. Horton, may I help?
Thanks. So nice of you.
There. Right side for the hypo this time, isn't it? Just touch with his cotton. Ready now, Doctor.
What's
the matter, Mrs. Horton?
I'm just cold. Alcohol.
After this, I advise you to go home and rest. These massive doses are a little painful, but they give results. There. That's all. Just relax here, and you can leave in 10 minutes. Come, Miss Banks. I want to talk to you. You might as well stop acting.
I can't get up. My feet,
Ben. Look at her. Something's happened.
Hysteria.
No, her face. Oh, Ben, she's falling. Mrs. Horton, hold on to me. I've got you.
Hold her up. Leslie, what is it?
Pain. Terrible pain.
Where? What from?
Sick. Everywhere. Pain. Everything's pain. Pain in my head. Pain in my feet. My feet. My feet.
Doctor, she's dead.
Yes, Grace. Get a card from the files. I want to study it. From the first day Mrs. Horton came here.
What was it, Ben? What happened to her?
Symptoms are of a heart condition from which it seems the patient has just expired. Then you must call her husband. Grace, did you hear me?
Yes, Dr. Sloan.
All right, let's take a break here from the New Adventures of Nero Wolfe from February 23rd, 1951, the case of the malevolent medic, starring Sidney Greenstreet. I got to tell you, Lisa, I've been having some sushi from Bistro Wasabi here. Oh my gosh, I'm a happy camper.
I'm seeing that happy
you
face
see,
again.
We're going to post some pictures of me.
Of Happy Carl.
Oh my gosh, this food is amazing. We're going to talk to two of the people from Maggie and Sandra from Bistro Wasabi in about 30 minutes or so. So stick around for that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right. This is the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. Lisa Wolfe is here as well. Lisa, we're tuning into your uncle's radio show, Nero Wolfe.
Yes, Uncle Nero and I are very close.
Very, very close. All right. Let's get back to this. The conclusion now of the New Adventures of Nero Wolfe.
Well, I discourage your visit here, Mr. Horton. I do have a sort of curiosity about the operation of so-called big business. Maybe I'll be a glass of beer and hear an explanation of the rise and fall of this morning's stock market.
You don't think I've come here socially? I wish to engage your services for...
Not available.
You're a detective, aren't you?
Specializing in cases that interest me.
Sherry, Mr. Horton?
I don't need it, thank you.
But Mr. Wolfe says he specializes in cases that...
I've just got here. I haven't told my story. I don't believe you even know who I am.
Oh, yes, we do. We do indeed. A millionaire.
Did I offend you by speaking of a fee?
No, on the contrary. It is that portion of your conversation which interested me most. Frankly, I plan to spend the evening examining the first edition of Henry James I'd like to purchase, and the word fee suggested a possible way. Now, what have you done, sir?
What have I done?
One doesn't have to be a detective to recognize you're in trouble, Mr. Horton.
Look, Mr. Wolfe, I have done nothing. But I've got a question I've got to have answered. I need facts. They tell me you're the man who can give them to me.
If Nero Wolfe can't get them for you, they're not facts, they're fancies, Mr. Horton.
Well, my story's involved.
But the gist of it is, your beautiful wife, a former model, died last week. The death certificate indicated a heart attack. You suggest he was murdered.
How did you know?
Never mind how I came to my conclusions. How did you come to yours?
Leslie had been going to a Dr. Benjamin Sloan. She said he was a specialist. Some friend had recommended. She'd been upset. He was giving her vitamin B shot, she told me.
You doubt that was true?
Dr. Sloan informed me, after she died in his office, there'd been a heart condition from the beginning. Well, I don't believe it. Leslie was a very emotional girl. She'd have been quite frightened of a heart ailment. She'd have told me about it.
Maybe she didn't comprehend its seriousness.
Dr. Sloan did. Why didn't he get in touch with me at once about it? Then, when I went to clear up Leslie's room, I discovered something. Leslie didn't go to Sloan through a friend. She'd known him when she was a model and he was a hospital intern. She'd kept letters he'd written to her then. Love letters.
Indeed.
Well, doesn't that give you an idea, Mr. Wolfe? Sloan lost Leslie to me. No man who'd been in love with Leslie would ever get over it. Would a man be jealous enough, kill a woman he loved, rather than have her belong to another man?
An interesting theory, Mr. Horton, one frequently advanced in fiction. Shall we investigate and see how it works out in fact?
You'll take the case, then.
The intricacies of the feminine nature are challenging, if you do not have to come in contact with the creatures. The practical research in such matters I leave to Mr. Goodwin here. It is a field in which he specializes.
But it's you I want.
Our method of operation is not under your control, Mr. Horton. If you'll be so kind, Archie, get a first-hand report of Dr. Benjamin Sloan and the women in his life.
Just came to ask a few routine questions, Dr. Sloan.
I don't understand your interest in the Horton case, Mr. Goodwin, is it?
That's right.
The death certificate was signed and a report made to the medical inspector.
Detectives are a snoopy lot.
Detectives? Are you from the police department?
No, I'm employed to note some details before we close up the Leslie Horton estate. Sudden deaths have to be double-checked.
I'm afraid I can't add a thing to what I've already reported.
Well, thanks for seeing me anyhow. Been a pleasant visit. Ever have a patient die in your office before, Dr. Sloan?
No, but I've seen similar cases in the hospital, of course.
Was Mrs. Horton warned about her heart condition, Dr. Sloan?
I discussed her case with her fully and frankly.
And her husband, wasn't Mr. Horton alarmed?
He didn't know. Mrs. Horton's ailment was, well, not to bore a layman with medical details, was not a fatal one necessarily. She might have gone on for years.
Just played in bad luck, huh?
The worst.
Mm-hmm. When'd you first meet her?
Several weeks ago.
And you saw her how many times?
It's all on the record. She was nervous. I prescribed thiamine chloride. Her medical report card shows that. You read it for yourself.
Well, I guess that's all, Dr. Sloan. Won't bother you further.
Miss Banks will show you out.
Yes, Dr. Sloan?
Sort of a modern Aladdin arrangement, isn't it? Wish I could press a buzzer and have a beautiful girl like you appear.
Mr. Goodwin is leaving.
Oh, this way, Mr. Goodwin. You can use the side door. The waiting room's full of patients.
So long, Doctor.
This way through the lab. There's a door from it into the corridor.
Cozy place, all those bottles. I suppose there's enough stuff in here to kill an army.
To cure one.
Miss Banks, may I say that you're the kind of a nurse that patients dream about? Make it a pleasure to go to a hospital. Blonde hair, blue eyes, winkers an inch long. Are they real?
If you'll excuse me.
What do I have to come down with to persuade you to take care of me, huh?
I don't take cases. I'm a technician. Good day, Mr.
So you work just for Dr. Sloan? That's too bad the way he's involved in this Horton case. It looks serious.
Mrs. Horton simply died of a heart attack in Dr. Sloan's office.
If you wanted to help your boss, Miss Banks, you'd stop rushing around and answer a few questions.
I'm sure Dr. Sloan gave you the necessary information.
Guess he doesn't realize the trouble he's in. If you can supply any details that'll change the picture, you'll be doing him a great favor. He's a nice guy. I want to help.
What is there to say? The report...
Let's get it in your own words. Just what really happened here that day?
Well, Dr. Sloan gave Mrs. Horton the vitamin B shot. That was routine.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't get up afterward. She said she was sick. And then she fell and I caught her.
And Dr. Sloan administered emergency treatment. What did that consist of, Miss Banks?
All that is in the office record.
What would bring on such an attack?
It could have been several things.
Could it have been something she ate? Acute indigestion affects the heart. Maybe Mrs. Horton would be here now if the doctor thought to use a stomach pump.
He did use one. He did everything there was time to do.
She certainly went in a hurry. Suffer a lot?
She said she was in pain.
Where? Her stomach?
No, not her stomach.
Where then?
She seemed to be in pain all over.
Reflex, maybe? When it was over, what did you do, Miss Banks?
Call Mr. Horton.
Must have been a blow to the great man. I understand she was younger than he is and quite a sultry gal.
I've talked to you professionally because you said it was necessary to help Dr. Sloan. Is that all, Mr. Goodwin?
I guess it is for now. Unless you'll have dinner with me.
Thank you, no.
I'm handsome, hardworking, and harmless. I'll bring you references from my employer. What do you say?
The express elevator's the one on the right.
Must be there's another man. Wouldn't be the doctor, would it? Well, you'll fit better in a Pullman kitchen than here among the test tubes at that. My reluctant congratulations.
Verdicarger?
Innocent as lambs, both Sloan and the nurse.
Evidence to prove it?
My unfailing sensibilities, not the murderer type. Nice couple, doctor and the nurse. I suspect they're engaged. She's so much in love with him, I could have been you and she wouldn't have known the difference.
Very flattering. Records?
The usual medical record, Mrs. Horton's first visit, symptoms, subsequent visits. Here are the notes on it.
Vitamin B shots. No chance they brought this on, huh?
Dr. Sloan says absolutely not. I checked that with other doctors. But Mrs. Horton did go into this right after the hypo.
There's his story, jives with Sloan's?
Mm-hmm. A little more detailed. She says he did everything. He even used a stomach pump.
The woman was in pain? What's this? Head to feet?
My way of saying pain all over.
What other papers did you examine?
Only the medical record.
Get back to Sloan's office late tonight and examine all the papers in his desk.
Can't you trust me? I tell you, there's no reason even to suspect these two.
When you have one of your adolescent's infatuations on, blood dripping from a dagger in a girl's hand would look to you like crushed rose petals. With this Grace Banks out of the way, maybe you can recognize evidence.
Sounds like a long, bleak evening.
Hand me that medical book and then be on your way. I want to think.
Mr. Goodwin.
Oh, good evening, Dr. Sloan. This is a surprise to us both. I didn't anticipate that you'd be keeping office hours after midnight.
What are you doing in my office at 2 o'clock in the morning, Mr. Goodwin?
Reading your mail and having a ghoulish time surrounded by all these shiny instruments of yours.
You've been rifling my desk.
I wouldn't do that if I were you. I've put things back very neatly, even the letters from this little secret compartment, which isn't secret at all to anybody who knows about desks. I've kept only
Give
one.
Give me that.
Easy. It's the my darling mind first shan't ever give you up one way or another one. You remember it? I'll bet that nice little nurse you're engaged to never wrote that, did she?
What do you intend to do with it?
Mark it Exhibit A in the Horton murder case. Maybe you'd like to come with me and explain it to Nero Wolfe.
Very moving, very flattering, very interesting if you like women, but also very incriminating, Dr. Sloan.
What does it prove? A silly woman with a nervous breakdown imagined she was infatuated with me?
A woman who is now dead, you must remember, under, shall we say, unusual circumstances. You signed a death certificate which stated Mrs. Horton died of a heart attack. As you signed it, Dr. Sloan, did you remember she had threatened you? And heave a sigh of relief that fate had done you such a good turn?
I didn't bear Leslie any ill will. I was sorry for her.
You felt adequate to the situation. You called no other doctor, though there are several in your building.
My first thought, of course, was that it was some extraordinary allergic reaction to the vitamin dose.
It was not until an hour or two after she was dead you decided she expired from a heart attack.
Yes.
How did you explain the pain?
I reported no pain.
Miss Banks said Mrs. Horton had pain from her head to her feet.
Grace said that?
Well, not in those words, but that was the general
idea. Dr. Sloan, why did you use a stomach pump on a heart case?
Why, I told you I tried everything. Sometimes an acute digestive disturbance.
I suggest you did it because to you, as to any qualified physician, the pain in the feet suggested poisoning, a particular kind of poison, an inorganic poison.
There wasn't any in her stomach.
You maintain that? Archie, get the medical examiner on the phone. Tell him the body of Miss Hal Horton must be examined for any evidence of poisoning.
I know you think Mrs. Horton was murdered, but it's impossible. There'd been no one near her.
Miss Banks?
Miss Banks couldn't have done it. She was working with me constantly.
That's what I thought you'd say, Dr. Sloan.
Mr. Wolfe, I had to see you. This is the most dreadful thing I've ever heard of. Trying to accuse Dr. Sloan of murdering a patient.
It appears he had a reason to want Mrs. Horton dead, Miss Banks. She was that thing the poets write about, a woman scorned. She had sent him this hysterical letter threatening scandal if he rejected her. He couldn't control her. She kept coming back to his office making scenes.
He gave her nothing but thiamine chloride. I know. I fixed the shop myself.
Don't start covering for
her. I'm not. I tell you, I'd fill the needle. And I didn't put anything but thiamine chloride in it. You haven't any reason to think anybody did, except for that letter you stole. If it wasn't for that letter... Give it to me. Give it to me.
Come on, Archie, quick.
Now drop it, baby. Come away from that fireplace. Why, you little tiger, kitten. I didn't think you had it in you. Come on, let go of it. Let go. Give it to Papa. Now, look what you did. You almost got Nero Wolf out of his chair.
Destroying evidence is a serious offense, young woman.
She kept coming to the office, writing him, pestering him. I heard her from the laboratory.
You read her letters, too, didn't you? You knew if something didn't stop her, Dr. Benjamin Sloan was a ruined man.
But he didn't kill her. I know he didn't.
I don't believe he did.
You... You don't? Well, then who?
You've just provided an excellent motive for having done it yourself, Miss Banks. Pears and white wine. Cold, luscious, exotic. Excellent, Fritz, excellent.
Best thing that's happened today. I don't like this Sloan case. If you ask me, I think that Horton Dane got what was coming to her.
Those are not the words of abstract justice, nor the phrases of a gentleman of culture. A good detective never plays favorites. Good night's rest, and you will find your attitude more normal by morning.
You expect to have this case solved by morning?
It's solved now. Thanks to the expedition I sent you on this afternoon. Your rest can wait. No one will escape.
I feel like a murderer myself. If I hadn't wormed it out of Grace about the Horton woman complaining of pain, and if you hadn't jumped at the word feet...
That, Archie, my dear fellow, is the purpose for which you exist, to discover pertinent facts. Have we quite finished? Coffee in the study, then.
Here's the door. I'll go.
Mr. Wolf in?
He isn't seeing anyone this evening, Mr. Horton.
Well, he's seeing me.
Archie, if that's Mr. Horton, I'll see him.
You'd better.
Sorry you found Mr. Goodman so impossible, Mr. Horton. He came to pay you a call this afternoon. I sent him, but he didn't find you in, did you, Archie?
No, but I made myself at home. I knew anything that would help to solve this case you'd want us to have.
What do you mean? You were in my house? What did you take?
Nothing of monetary value, I assure you, that will not be returned in due course. But before I announce the solution of a case, I like to have all my little props in place. I appreciate a well-rounded performance.
Mr. Wolf, I've had enough of this foolishness, this delay. I hired you to convict Sloan, not to play parlor games.
You must be patient, Mr. Horton. Don't force me.
I want action.
Well, I had planned to wait until the morning, but if you insist... These papers here may interest you, Mr. Horton. Mr. Goodwin here collects them, your wife's letters.
Leslie's?
You recognize the script? These are addressed to Dr. Sloan.
Do they prove anything against him?
A lady's correspondence should be kept private. This other letter, however, was sent to you.
To me? Leslie's? What? Give it to me.
Easy, Horton, easy. Don't grab.
No, but that letter's mine. You stole it from my desk.
There is a point in a case, Mr. Horton, where letters cease to be personal property and become evidence.
What evidence can that letter provide?
It seems you had reason for wanting to kill your wife, Mr. Horton. A man can get annoyed by a note saying his wife never loved him, that all his money isn't enough, and that she's going to another man.
You accusing me of murder?
It could have been the perfect crime. Poison in one of those pills she was forever taking, or on the tip of the cigarette she chain-smoked, in a doctor's office to die in. If you hadn't been fool enough to try to pin it on Sloan, you might have gotten away with it.
If I had known while she was alive what Leslie was, I might have done anything. But that letter you stole from me was one she left under my pillow. I didn't find it until after she was dead. I didn't kill her. Sloan did.
You hired me to prove that, Mr. Horton. Suppose you let me go about my business.
Nero Wolf's office. Yeah? Oh, you did? Good boy. We'll expect you. I'll tell Mr. Wolf at once. Medical examiner's officer, just as you thought, they found poison in the body.
Listen to me.
Inspector Kramer's picking up Dr. Sloan and Grace. They'll be here any minute. Kramer's set to make an arrest.
I told you. The police know it's Sloan.
Put the letters and Mrs. Horton's bag on my desk, Archie.
Leslie's alligator bag? You stole that from my house this afternoon, too. Those things are mine.
Inspector Kramer will want to take them with him.
Well, do you think I want it made public what Leslie did to me? Kramer can't have them.
Maybe the inspector will want to take you, too, Mr. Horton.
Let them in, Archie.
Come in, Inspector Kramer. Oh. Dr. Sloan, Miss Banks.
Wolf asked me to bring them here first before I locked anybody up. Mrs. Horton was murdered, all right. I'm sending a man for Horton, too.
You won't have to. Mr. Horton's waiting here to join the party. Come into Mr. Wolf's office.
Good evening, Inspector.
Good evening, Wolf.
Will you all please range yourselves around the room as I indicate? Miss Banks here. Dr. Sloan, Mr. Horton. Archie, you stand between the two men, if you please.
Mr. Wolf, this is a dreadful mistake. I swear the doctor didn't...
Stop thinking about the doctor. What about you?
If you're accusing Miss Banks, I might as well tell
Hold
you
it,
now.
Hold it, Dr. Sloan. From here on, anything you say will be held against you.
That's what I want. Let Grace go home and
well,
I'll...
For heaven's sake, why don't you arrest the man? Isn't it obvious he's guilty? You and your trumped-up charges against me.
I'll do the talking now, Mr. Horton. Mrs. Horton died from a certain inorganic poisoning. Poison administered in your office, Dr. Sloan, with a hypo syringe.
Let's get it over with. I gave her the hypo.
But I fill the needle.
There you are. They're both guilty.
Which would solve the case if they weren't lying. Miss Banks believes Dr. Sloan killed Leslie for her sake. Dr. Sloan thinks Miss Banks put poison in the hypo to save him from professional ruin. They're trying to protect each other. The fact is the hypo they gave was perfectly harmless. It did not kill Mrs. Horton.
But then what did?
Mrs. Horton came to your office in desperation, Dr. Sloan. But she came prepared for the worst. You see this handbag? Can any of you identify it?
Yes.
It's hers.
Is it Mr. Horton?
It's Leslie's.
The bag she carried to the office the day she died. Open it, Archie. You will see it contains her change purse, billfold, cigarette case, matches, her handkerchief, nothing more. That is, not unless you look closely. Then you will observe this lining has a double fold.
A secret compartment.
Exactly. We open it this way, and there we find it. A hypodermic needle with which the unhappy woman committed suicide. Miss Banks, Dr. Sloan, you can stop protecting one another. Mr. Horton, the world need never know you were a betrayed husband. Mrs. Horton killed herself while in a confused state following a mental breakdown. The case of the malevolent medic is closed.
How did you ever get the hunch about the handbag, Mr. Wolf?
I know nothing about women, but on my occasional trips abroad, I have been forced to observe their handbags. Monstrosities. They hold anything and everything.
Now that our guests have gone, Fritz is bringing coffee to the study. Would you like some beer?
I believe I would. Somehow I feel I've earned it.
Here you are.
Poor fellow, I'm very sorry for you.
How so?
This is one case in which there is no falsely accused, unattached young lady for you to squire about. Well, here's to your better luck next time.
You have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight's transcribed story by Ruth Adams Knight was based on the characters created by Rex Stout. This is an Edwin Fadiman program, produced and directed by J. Donald Wilson. In the cast were Harry Bartell as Archie Goodwin, and Gene Bates, Vic Perrin, Bruce Payne, Bill Johnstone, and Mary Lansing. Next week at this same time, Nero Wolfe and Archie will bring you The Case of the Hasty Will. Don Stanley speaking. More good mystery at Sam Spade next on NBC.
That is The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, February 23rd, 1951, The Case of the Malevolent Medic, starring Sidney Greenstreet. And your Uncle Nero would be very proud.
I love Nero.
Yeah. All right. This is the WGN Radio Theater. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll be right back. All right, hour two, WGN Radio Theater, 1208 here on a Monday morning. Happy Monday, Lisa.
Happy Monday, Carl.
Yes, indeed. All right.
Here. We're still here. We haven't left yet.
You haven't fallen asleep yet.
No, not this time.
That's good. We'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning. We have the Screen Directors Playhouse this hour. Then we'll tune into the Charlie McCarthy Show. I know you're going to love that. I don't know how a ventriloquist was popular on the radio. I can't figure that out, but...
Love that.
Nevertheless, we're going to play an episode. But all of this is brought to you in part by our sponsor, Cat's Pride. Dum, 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 dum. It's time.
time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars as Beetle in the upcoming fantasy Kubo and the Two Strings, about a poor young street singer who goes on a quest to find a suit of armor that was once worn by his dad.
All right, if they can answer who this celebrity is, what will they win?
They will win a $50 gift card for Bistro Wasabi, and they are here in the studio, so we're really excited to talk about that. And they will also win a pair of tickets to the Chicago Flower and Garden Show.
I have been stuffing myself with Bistro Wasabi sushi.
I'm about to post that photo, so we can all laugh at you a little bit.
Gosh, is it good. Okay, we're gonna call 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 if you can tell us who this celebrity is. Here's a hint. His first movie, he played Wooderson in 1993's Dazed and Confused.
That's what I love about these high school girls, man. I get older, they stay the same age.
Yes, they do.
Yes, they do.
All right, give us a call, 312-981-7200. Name that celebrity. We'll find our winner after this break.
We are back. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
That's what I love about these high school girls, man. I get older, they stay the same age.
Yes, they do.
Yes, they
That's
do.
True, you know.
Oh, we've got James on the line from Chicago. Hey, James.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm great. James, I'm hoping you know that celebrity.
Yes, Matthew McConaughey.
Absolutely right. James, you are a big winner tonight. You have won a pair of tickets to the Chicago Flower and Garden Show, running March 12th through March 20th at Navy Pier, and you can check them out at chicagoflower.com. And you have won a $50 gift card for Bistro Wasabi. They have two locations, Lake in the Hills, Hoffman Estates. You can check them out at thebistrowasabi.com. We are so excited to give this to you. This is great Japanese food, and we're going to be talking about that right now. So thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you so much.
Great to talk
to you,
James.
Appreciate it. All right. Before we tune in to the Screen Directors Playhouse performance of Let's Live a Little starring Robert Cummings, I want to welcome to the show two guests. And we have Maggie, who is the hostess at the Bistro Wasabi, and also Sandra, who is the bartender. Welcome, girls, to the show.
Thank you.
All right. You're very welcome. Well, you know what? We have been we've been chowing down on some unbelievable sushi here. Peter Rim, the chef, is here, and he cooked it, or not cooked it, prepared it
right here
for us. Fresh as can be.
So we had the opportunity to watch the master at work here.
All right. And you can see some of the pictures of us gorging ourselves.
I will post them as soon as we're finished here.
All right. So start with you, Maggie. How long have you been working at Bistro Wasabi?
About a year and a half.
Yeah? What's your favorite food there?
Oh, definitely the spicy tuna roll.
Tuna roll. And Sandra, how are you? You're the bartender there.
I am. I'm good, thank you.
Yeah. And how long have you been working at Bistro Wasabi?
About a year and a half.
Yeah. What's your favorite food?
The Maguro salad, which is spicy tuna as well.
Oh, it's two spicy tuna girls.
Yeah. King crab is amazing.
I had some king crab here.
The crab is awesome,
Mike might have ate more than I ate, actually.
I think I did.
You might have, which is quite the task. Pretty good.
So we want to mention where you're located, which is Lake in the Hills and Hoffman Estates. You've got two locations, and I know you've got some specials. I know sushi is a big special, and we had it prepared fresh for us today. You also have some dry-aged steak. Can you tell us a little bit about that and the preparation of it?
We do have some stuff for people who are not sushi lovers. We have dry-aged steak. It's aged for at least 30 days. It's grilled, normally served with hibachi vegetables, rice, and miso soup. We have teriyaki chicken.
I had the teriyaki chicken last time I was there.
And aren't you a big oyster fan?
No.
You're not?
No, I'm not, but...
Maybe it was Mike. I confused
you.
You
like oysters,
too.
Mike?
I mean, I can deal with that. I'm not a huge, huge fan, but definitely.
What did Peter have here? There was spicy tuna. There was some California rolls. There was a salad. What else? There was king crab.
Tuna. We had the spicy tuna hand rolls, mm-hmm. king crab sashimi, salmon sashimi, spicy salmon hand rolls, king crab California rolls.
Can you tell us a little bit about the preparation at the restaurant and how they're prepared fresh per each customer's order?
The spicy salmon is made with chili aioli, scallions, and masago. And the Maguro salad has the spicy tuna, pico de gallo, avocado, and fresh tortilla chips.
And you've got this master chef that is preparing throughout the evening?
We do.
Very, very cool. All right, two locations, Lake in the Hills and Hoffman Estates. Just go to their website. Just go to thebistrowasabi.com, thebistrowasabi. Maggie and Sandra, great having you on the show. And we'll see you at Bistro Wasabi.
Thank you for having us.
You'll definitely want to go to see these girls. Very pretty young ladies. And the food is great as well. All right. Very nice having you on the show. All right. It's time now for the Screen Directors Playhouse. This is Let's Live a Little, starring Robert Cummings from January 16th, 1949.
The NBC Theater presents...
Screen Directors Guild Assignment... Production, Let's Live a Little. Director, Richard Wallace. Star, Robert Cummings.
This is the Screen Directors Guild presentation of United California Productions' sparkling new comedy, Let's Live a Little, starring Robert Cummings in his original role. And introducing the director of the film, Richard Wallace. The three main elements which go into a motion picture production are the star, the story, and the director. Tonight's star is Robert Cummings, and the story, Let's Live a Little, is ready for your enjoyment. But first, here's the screen director, the man who welded star and story into a perfect unity, and the director of such memorable films as Shopworn Angel, The Little Minister, and Kiss and Tell, Mr. Richard Wallace.
Thank you. Thank you very much. The comedy you're about to hear is a far cry from the old days of Mack Sennett when I first learned this business of picture making. Our play tonight, Let's Live a Little, throws a series of gentle jabs at the advertising business, and especially at our current concern with the state of our nerves. In short, it's the kind of a story that says, brother, don't take yourself too seriously. That's why it was fun to make and fun to do again here on the NBC Theater. Now, for the first time on the air, here's Let's Live a Little, starring Bob Cummings in his original role of Duke Crawford. Peace, quiet, and serenity all have nothing whatsoever to do with Duke, who happens to be an advertising executive. Michelle Bennett, his most important client, has already changed her mind three times on the theme of his current campaign. That is why, at the moment, if his nerves were to make a noise, they'd sound something like this.
Let's see. Arrange for the Hawaiian band for the radio show and the hula dancer for the convention exhibit.
Mr. Crawford.
What are you doing in my office?
Remember me? I'm your secretary.
Oh, yes. Oh, hello, Miss Adams. Yes, I'm sorry. Why don't you answer the phone?
Because it isn't ringing, Mr. Crawford.
Certainly it's ringing.
It isn't.
It is.
It isn't.
It isn't?
No.
Miss Adams, why don't you go away? Why don't you just go away?
Yes, Mr. Crawford.
Funny, I'd have sworn I heard a telephone. Oh, well. I guess I'm just tired. Oh, it's just my imagination. Now, don't pick it up, dude. Don't pick it up.
All alone by the telephone.
It isn't New Year's Eve, Mr. Crawford. I was ringing your phone.
You were? I mean, what do you want?
It's your fiancée, Michelle Bennett. She wants to see you.
My former fiancée, Miss Adams. Now throw her out.
Oh, Mr. Crawford, Miss Bennett's a client. Oh,
please, Miss Adams, no favoritism. Tell her I'm not here. Tell her I'm...
Dookie, darling.
Oh, hello, Michelle. The strange thing, I was just thinking about
kiss
you.
Kiss me, Dookie.
Yeah, I've got the new contract right here. I've switched all the backgrounds from Paris to Hawaii just like you wanted, Michelle.
Oh, Dookie, you're not going to insist on talking business, are you?
Now, look, it's your business, Michelle. If you want to sell cosmetic, you've got to sign a contract.
You know, Duke, I have a feeling that once the contract is signed, I won't be seeing much of you.
Why, that's ridiculous, Michelle.
I've got an idea.
An idea? Now, Michelle, please don't have any more ideas. I can't stand any more changes.
I know, darling, and I appreciate all the nice work you've done on that Hawaiian campaign, but
Michelle, don't say it, please, Michelle.
But I don't want Hawaii. I want Sun Valley.
Sun Valley? Sun Valley? Sun Valley! Sun Valley! Mr. Montgomery, I quit.
Michelle Bennett?
Women. Women. I hate women.
Yes, yes. I know, Duke. I've heard all about it.
Why can't I work on men's accounts? Tough, hard-boiled, straight-shooting, he-blooded men. Women. Deliver me from women. Get yourself another boy, Monty. I can't stand it anymore.
Duke, even though this is a $1 million account, I'm going to take you off it for a while.
You know, women. I hate... What'd you say?
Yeah, take a few weeks off. Get a good rest. And look, you might read this book while you're at it. It's called Let's Live a Little.
Let's live a little. That's an original idea. What's it about?
Oh, it's about your nerves, serenity of mind. It's just a thing for you.
Yeah. Yeah, let's have a look at it. Let's Live a Little by Dr. J.O. Loring. Who's he?
A famous neurologist.
Say, Let's Live a Little. You know, Monty, we might work up a swell publicity campaign on this.
Oh, no, Duke. You need a rest.
Rest? Rest nothing. Monty, this could be sensational. I can see it now. What a slogan. Why not live a little before you die a lot? Every day in every way, let's live a little longer. Give me the phone, Chief. I want my secretary. I want the head of the radio department. I want 5 artists, 3 copywriters, 2 photographers.
Have you an appointment to see Dr. Loring?
Appointment? No, I haven't got time for appointments.
Yes, I can see you're a busy man.
Yes, well, I... What are you looking at?
Your breast pocket.
My breast pocket? That's just my handkerchief. Yeah, it looks like a pair of socks, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Well, I'm here to talk over the publicity on Dr. Loring's book, Let's Live a Little. My name is Duke Crawford.
Oh, yes, Mr. Crawford, your secretary called. The doctor's expecting you. Just go right in.
Yeah, thank you. Anybody here? Well, I guess I'll put on these socks. All alone by the telephone.
Hello.
Hello.
Counting your piggies?
What? Oh, no. I was just putting on my socks. I mean...
I see. You usually wait till you come downtown in the morning to put your socks on?
Well, what's wrong with putting on your socks? Perfume. It's funny. I smell perfume.
Yes?
Mm-hmm. And I suppose you use beauty cream, mascara, eyeshadow, and pancake makeup too, huh?
Now and then.
A woman.
A man.
Yes, and I'm glad to be one.
Oh, you don't like women?
Definitely not. The most gorgeous, glamorous creature in the world could be right here in this room, and I could throw my arms around her and kiss her. Yes, yes, kiss her. Right on the lips
And
absolutely nothing. No, I just laugh at her like this.
That I'd like to see.
Oh, you would, huh?
Now, Mr. Crawford, don't.
See? I mean, see? I'm laughing.
What a remarkable sense of humor.
Yes, yes. Well, is Dr. Loring in there?
No, that office belongs to my associate, Dr. Field.
Oh, I thought... Your associate?
Yes, I'm Dr. Loring.
You are? I mean, you are? Well, that's funny. I thought I was going to see a man.
Why? Does it make that much difference to you?
Well no, it's just that, well, I found women clients extremely difficult to do business with.
With your approach, I can well imagine.
Dr. Loring, could I see you a minute, please?
Of course, Richard. Mr. Crawford, this is Dr. Field.
Hi.
How do you do?
Yes.
Joe, I just wanted to make sure we were going to hear Professor Birkhouse's lecture tonight.
I'll be ready at 7.
Yes, I don't mean to interrupt you, but isn't anybody going to answer the phone?
The phone? What phone?
Well, the phone that's ringing.
Mr. Crawford, you mustn't let yourself become excited.
Excited? Who's excited? Just answer the phone.
Excuse me, doctor. I'll leave you with your patient. Call me if he gets violent.
He thought I was your patient.
It didn't ring.
It didn't?
Give me your hand, Mr. Crawford.
Oh, but please, Dr. Loring...
Your pulse, Mr. Crawford? Oh. Tell me, do you drink?
No, thanks, doc. Not right now. Say, excuse me, what is your first name?
Joe. Have you read my book yet?
No, I just sell them. I don't read them.
You really should. Your nerves are in terrible condition. Do you ever hear strange voices?
Voices? Look, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm fine.
Well, you'll be hearing voices soon, Mr. Crawford. That's your next step.
Next step? Oh, well, look, this is ridiculous. I'm just a little unstrung. Business, you know.
Would you like to talk about it? There's a balcony off my office, and it's such a lovely day. Look up. Isn't it beautiful out here? What do you see?
Trouble.
No blue sky?
No, just trouble.
A woman?
Yeah, it's a woman. Michelle Bennett.
Oh, the cosmetician?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, we were sort of engaged for a while, for business reasons.
Tell me about it. Tell me all about it, Mr. Crawford.
Yeah, well, you see, her company has a $1 million contract up for renewal. She keeps stringing me along about signing it.
Is she very attractive?
Yeah, oh, sure, she's beautiful, in a financial sort of way.
And she's in love with you, but you always talk business when you're together.
Yeah, something like that.
Have you tried being a little more attentive, Mr. Crawford?
Attentive? How?
Champagne, soft lights, a waltz. Perhaps a caress. Then I don't think I'd mind if the contract were barely mentioned just after the waltz.
Have you ever been in the Pink Champagne Room?
Pink Champagne, it sounds lovely.
Joe, would you like to see it tonight?
Tonight? It would be wonderful. Wonderful, Mr. Crawford. I was speaking purely as a doctor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay, Doc. Well, well, your prescription is accepted. I take Michelle to the Pink Champagne Room tonight.
Yes, Michelle. Mr. Crawford?
Yes?
If I...
Yes?
Nothing, Mr. Crawford. You won't forget the waltz.
No. No, I won't forget it. Well, see you later. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, and good afternoon to you, Dr. Field.
Wouldn't you be more comfortable if you put your shoes on?
Shoes? Shoes? Oh, yes, thanks. Yeah, I'll put them on when I get back to the office.
Strange case, that, Crawford.
Richard, wouldn't it be nice if we went dancing tonight instead of going to that dry old lecture?
Dancing? Hmm? Well, after all, Joe, I was under the impression...
Someplace like the Pink Champagne Room.
Lisa, let's go to the Pink Champagne Room.
I would love to do
that,
Carl.
And we can have some bistro wasabi...
That sounds
sushi.
Perfect.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yes.
And a libation. That would be good, too. All right. We'll get back to the Screen Directors Playhouse after the news. It's 12:31 in the morning. It's time for WGN News with Susan Burke. Oh, we're going to take a quick break. All right. Before we get into Screen Directors Playhouse here on the WGN Radio Theater, do want to remind our listeners, do us a big, huge kissy kiss favor, right? This is like a big kiss to us if you would go to our Facebook page and like us. We'd love to see the likes jumping up. And we're over 1,500 likes now, which
We've
is pretty
got,
good.
Yeah, 1,505 likes.
All right, so Do us a big favor, folks. Do go to Facebook and search WGN Radio Theater and like us. And you can post to us. Tell us what you want to hear. Is there a classic radio show that you want to hear? Do you like Suspense or The Shadow or Jack Benny? Whatever you want to hear, let us know so we can play it for you, because we want to make you happy. And one way to make us happy is post to us, ask us questions. You know, how tall am I? How tall is Lisa? And, you know, that kind of stuff.
That's important.
And we'll be, you know, because that's really important. Yeah. You know, can't go another night without knowing how tall we are. And
hey, people do ask a lot of personal questions.
We don't mind.
We don't mind.
No, we don't mind.
Most of them.
No. All right. And then like us. All right. Let's get back to this now. This is Let's Live a Little on the Screen Directors Playhouse.
Oh, Dookie, you waltz beautifully, darling. Oh, I love the soft lights, the violins.
The soft light of your eyes and the sweet music of your smile, Michelle.
You're so charming and attentive. I can't resist you when you're like this.
Oh, you can't? I mean, I'm so glad you're having a nice time.
Dookie, I have caused you a lot of trouble, haven't I?
Trouble? Why, no, it's been fun.
No, I'm sorry, darling. I'll sign the contract now if you want.
Contract? What contract?
Duke, why are you looking at that woman?
Woman? You got, oh, well, that's no woman. That's my doctor.
Well, stop staring at her.
And she wouldn't come with me.
Come where?
She's beautiful.
Duke!
She's lovely.
Duke!
You what? Oh, yes, the contract. Yes, right here, Michelle.
The contract. I'll teach you about contracts, you...
Michelle, you... put on that champagne bucket. Don't, you... don't, Michelle!
Dookie, what have I done?
To be or not to be. I hate women. Answer the phone. Get me a doctor. Answer the phone. Get me a doctor. Answer the phone.
Look at the moonlight on the water. I never knew Shady Lake Lodge could be so beautiful.
Well, it'd be a lot more beautiful if you hadn't brought that Crawford fellow along. Frankly, Joe, I don't like him.
Oh, he isn't just a fellow, Richard. He's a patient. His nerves need a rest.
Yes, so I noticed.
Well. The doctor and the doctor. Well, be professional. Somebody ask me how I'm feeling.
How are you feeling?
No, I don't think I'll tell you. My doctor here might take it as a breach of confidence.
Then I'll ask you, are you feeling better, Duke?
Oh, I'm ready for business. I'd like to discuss your book with you for a few minutes.
Then let's all go back to the lodge.
Joe, I thought that you and I might take a canoe ride while we talk things over.
I still think
the water will be very soothing to me, Joe, very soothing.
All right, Duke.
Yeah, what were you saying, Dr. Field?
Let's all go back to the lodge.
Oh, I'd love to, but you see, I have a date. Coming, Joe?
But...
Joe, tell me, do you believe in all those things you've preached since we've been up here?
Naturally.
About letting nothing stop me from obtaining a worthwhile objective?
Duke, I...
And you want me to believe it?
Duke, we better go back to the shore.
You don't really mean that.
I'm your doctor. This is ridiculous. This is... You said you hated women.
Well, that was three other guys.
Duke, we can't keep this up.
Well, we can try. No, wait a minute. Don't move. You'll tip over the canoe.
I hardly think that's possible. The canoe won't paddle across dry land, Crawford. You've been beached here for 5 minutes.
Well, what do you know? I hadn't noticed it.
Oh, Richard, help me up.
I'm driving you back to the city first thing in the morning, Joe. There doesn't seem to be anything wrong with Mr. Crawford's nerve now.
Ah,
Good morning, Monty. Come on in. Are you living a little today?
Duke, my boy, what's happened to you?
I'm in love, just in love, that's all.
Oh, Michelle Bennett, that's fine, Duke, fine.
Who said anything about Michelle?
Say, that was a great little job you did in that Loring book. Now, Duke, listen, I want you to drop everything and get back to the Bennett account.
What? You can't mean that.
Well, I do mean it. That's your assignment, Duke.
Bennett. Always Michelle Bennett. I'd like to take Michelle Bennett and... Yes, Miss Adams.
There's a Dr. Field here to see you.
Dr. Field? Oh, yes. Send him in.
Crawford?
Oh, hello, Doctor. Sit down. What can I do for you?
Crawford, I'll be frank and brief. I've had a long talk with Dr. Loring, and I think there's something you should know.
I should?
It's not uncommon for a person in your former physical state to attempt to center his emotions upon an attractive woman. In this case, your doctor.
Well, what about it?
Frequently, such a phenomenon has a beneficial result. Dr. Loring felt it was her duty to find out if it would affect the cure in your case.
What are you talking about?
In short, Mr. Crawford, in Dr. Loring's eyes, you have been, shall we say, a guinea pig.
Guinea pig? A guinea pig?
I'm sure you'll realize that this is all for your own good.
Guinea pig. I'll teach her. I'll teach her who's a guinea pig. No, wait a minute, I gotta stay calm. Miss Adams! Miss Adams!
Yes, sir?
Bring me a guinea pig. No, I'm pure. I'm well. Oh, where's that Bennett contract?
What color?
What color what?
Guinea pig.
I am not. I want that Bennett contract and send Miss Bennett a dozen organs. Michelle. Michelle, dear, I'm back.
Oh, it's you.
Yes, it's me. Well, I see you got the orchids. Yeah. Well, I always think of you, dear, when I see a beautiful orchid. Well, it was quite an exciting evening we had at the Pink Champagne Room, wasn't it, dear? I mean, so many things happened all at once. And I, Michelle, no, not the vase. No, don't hit me with the vase. Not again. Michelle!
Dookie, darling, are you hurt, dearest?
No. Oh, I'm getting so I kind of like it.
Dookie, look, I've got my fountain pen. I'll sign the contract right now.
Contract? The contract?
Give it to me.
Right here.
There it is. All signed.
Well, let me have it.
Not until after the wedding.
Wedding? Huh. Why not? Well, all right. You win, Michelle.
Manhattan Towers.
Mr. Duke Crawford, please.
Hello?
Duke?
Joe? Hello, how are you?
Oh, all right. I just wanted to congratulate you.
Why?
Your coming marriage, I read about it in the papers.
Oh, yes, that. Well, thanks. Is the book selling all right?
Yeah, fine. I suppose you're all right now.
Oh, yes, fine. No more ringing.
Oh. Well, I don't suppose there's anything else to say.
No, I guess not.
Good luck, Duke.
Thanks. Thanks, Joe.
Bye.
Joe, you look ghastly.
Well, that's funny. You look like Richard, but you sound like Duke.
Oh, come now.
Duke, is it you?
Joe, this is Richard. You're hearing things.
Richard, why don't you answer the phone?
But, Joe, it isn't ringing.
Oh.
Well, that settles it. You need a rest. I'm canceling our appointment, and I'm taking you up to Shady Lake. A few days there, and you'll feel like a new woman.
All right, Richard. Whatever you say, Duke.
Yes?
Hello, Crawford. This is Dr. Field. I just called to tell you to cancel your publicity campaign for Dr. Loring.
Well, what's that got to do with you?
I've taken Dr. Loring to the Shady Lake Lodge for a much-needed rest. And as her doctor, I'm in full charge.
In full charge? What are you, Joe's husband or something?
I hope someday she will become Mrs. Field, yes.
Well, that's ridiculous. I'm coming out there to talk to Joe myself.
If you show your face around here, I'll be delighted to punch your head. And I assure you, I can do it.
Oh, you can, huh? Well, we'll see about that.
Dookie, what's been keeping you? We're due at the minister's in half an hour.
Well, don't wait for me, because I won't be there. And go and stick your head in a jar of your vanishing cream. And take your contract with you.
Oh, no, you don't. Little Michelle has plans for you.
Well, here's your room, Joe. Have a good night's sleep.
Thank you, Richard. I am tired. Good night.
Good night.
Now, open the window. Brush my hair. So to bed.
Shh, shh. Joe.
What?
Yeah, it's me, Duke, outside the window here.
Duke? Oh, no, you're not. You're my imagination.
You're what?
You're my imagination. I shouldn't even be talking to you.
Oh, your pal Field is out in front trying to keep your imagination from seeing you. Keep your voice down.
You're not there. You're not there.
Here, wait, I'll climb the window.
There.
Oh, I must get control of myself. It's no use. I still see him.
Oh, so that's it. Hearing voices and seeing things. So I'm not here at all, huh?
Of course not. It's just my imagination.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, if I'm just your imagination, I can't be blamed for doing this.
Oh. Talk about imagination.
All right, Crawford, put up your hands and... I'm sorry. I was expecting someone else.
Where are they?
They?
Duke and this Dr. Loring.
She's asleep. He didn't show up.
Oh, yeah? He was 10 minutes ahead of me.
You don't think he...
You don't know Duke.
Yeah, well, if he's here, we'd better stop them before they do anything foolish.
What's foolish about it?
Come on. What? Joe, your nerves.
Duke, you Bluebeard.
Oh, quiet, please. I'm very busy. Joe, darling.
Tell him to go away.
Let me get my hands on that vase.
Duke, where are you? I feel dizzy. Everyone looks like Duke.
You know, don't throw it at me. I'm not Duke. You're making mistakes.
You look like Duke. I know you're Duke.
No, it's your nerves. He's there with Joe. Oh, my head.
Oh, you're not Duke. Why did you pretend to be Duke?
Why doesn't somebody answer the telephone? The telephone's ringing.
Do you hear anything ringing, dear?
No, nothing.
Oh, it's funny. Every time I kiss you, it sounds like...
The NBC Theater has presented the Screen Directors Guild production of Let's Live a Little, starring Robert Cummings and introduced by the director of the film, Richard Wallace. And now, here again are tonight's star, Robert Cummings and director Richard Wallace.
Hey, Dick, you're not afraid of the microphone, are you? What are you so nervous about?
Nervous? I got a right to be nervous. I never want to go through an experience like that again.
But you haven't had a word to say since the start of the program.
That's the trouble. It makes me a nervous wreck to sit through a half hour of comedy without yelling, cut, not funny enough, didn't catch on fire, let's do it again.
Oh, I see. So you weren't satisfied with the performance?
I didn't say that.
Well, now, after all, you directed the film. I played the role the way you wanted it. Look, Bye-bye. Dick, after all, we've been through so much together. Now, how can you possibly...
All right. You were wonderful.
I was not. Now, you know I didn't play the first scene the way you told me to.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are witnessing an example of why directors turn gray.
Well, Dick, I'm only kidding. Seriously, here's my chance to do something that's been a long time coming. Express my thanks to that ingenious race of people, the screen directors. If it weren't for that guy behind the camera, the things that go on in front of the lens would be, well, they'd be pretty hopeless. So thanks, Dick. Thanks for all your skill, all your experience, and all your understanding.
Thank you, Bob. But all the thanks we want is to be able to keep right on creating films with actors as fine as yourself. Good night, folks.
Good night. Good night, Dick. And good night to you, Robert Cummings and Richard Wallace. Also heard on tonight's program were Betty Lou Gerson, Virginia Gregg, Tom Collins, Constance Crowder, John Daner, Sarah Selby, and Dan Ritz. Script was by Richard Allen Simmons, and original music was composed and conducted by Henry Russell. Production was under the supervision of Howard Wiley. Your announcer, Frank Barton. Robert Cummings is currently being seen in The Accused, a Hal Wallace production for Paramount. Listen again next week when the NBC Theater presents...
Screen Directors Guild Assignment, production The Exile. Director, Max Opholz. Star, Douglas Fairbanks, Jr.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
There's a lighthearted comedy on the Screen Directors Playhouse, Let's Live a Little, starring Robert Cummings. And you heard screen director there, Richard Wallace, make an appearance on the end of that program. It was heard on NBC January 16, 1949. Let's take a break, and then it's much more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Hey, Lisa's up. Nice job, Lisa. You stayed up. You stayed awake.
Well, it's, you know, been a big night here. Otherwise, I'm sure I would have been asleep.
I was going to have to call Stephanie and Todd.
You're going
to
tell on me?
Tell on you.
Tell on me.
If you were going to be sleeping in the third hour.
You're
here.
Not a good friend now, are you? Because I would never tell on you.
I will snitch on you so fast you
would
know what hit you.
I would poke you and wake you up before I told on you.
You are to be up in the third hour. If I'm up, you have to
I'll
be up.
I'll try really hard, Carl.
I'm usually in bed by 10:30.
Yeah, no. You know?
And so I take a nap before the show.
I don't think I could go to bed at 10:30 if I tried.
And drink coffee.
I don't drink coffee.
You know, keep up because we want to be awake so we can present these radio shows.
I'll try really hard.
Every Saturday and Sunday night, folks, make sure you mark your calendar. Lisa and I and the whole gang are here. And Dan Long, the best in the business in there, is our producer. And he is, it's an honor to work with you, buddy. You are a great producer. Really make us sound good. Thank you so much.
Well, let me say, the honor is all mine.
Well, thank you so
much. Oh, we're
much.
Having a little love fest
yeah,
here
but,
tonight.
You know,
it's always a love fest.
We absolutely love you, Dan. We think you're the best, buddy. And Lisa,
it's
you're,
true.
Yeah.
You know, you're not honored to work with
you're
me.
Not bad. I am honored to work with you. You know
I'm
that. Been honored to work with you
mostly honored
since
to work 2009. With you.
We started working together in 2009.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Long.
We still kind of like each other.
It's like two, right?
Too long.
Yeah. We do kind of like each other still. That's good. This hour, we have a ventriloquist on the radio. This
I
is always very puzzling to me how a ventriloquist was so popular on the radio, but hey. It worked.
It works.
The Charlie McCarthy Show. Candace Bergen's dad, Edgar Bergen, will be with us in just a few minutes. This is all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride. Dum, dum,
dum, dum, dum, dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in Mechanic Resurrection, an upcoming action thriller, the sequel to the 2011 film The Mechanic, about a contract killer who travels the world to complete three impossible assassinations.
All right, so if you can identify who this gal is, you will win a $50 gift card to Bistro Wasabi, right?
That's correct.
And what else?
They will also win a pair of tickets to the Chicago Flower and Garden Show March 12th to the 20th.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. First of all, here's a hint. She's the most, in my opinion,
she's
the prettiest
gorgeous.
Girl in Hollywood.
She's
and I would,
gorgeous.
I would date her.
You
yeah.
would date
yeah.
her.
You would. You could let her
I'll
know that.
I'll see if I can set you
I
guys
would,
up.
Yeah, she definitely... You know,
she's on the list.
She definitely makes the grade. All right, here is a clip. She played Cam, C-A-M, Cam, in 2007's Good Luck Chuck.
You're a dentist? You'll love me. Perfect teeth, no cavities. Want to see?
All right, give us a call, 312-981-7200. Tell us who that celebrity is. You'll win some fun prizes, and we'll find our winner after this break.
And this is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop, and we need some help identifying this celebrity's voice. Let's hear that movie clip again.
You're a dentist? You'll love me. Perfect teeth, no cavities. Want to see?
And we've got Thomas from Peru. I'm guessing that's Peru, Illinois. Is that right, Thomas?
That would be correct, yeah.
Okay. That would be a long way to send a signal. How you doing, Thomas?
I'm doing fantastic this night.
Great. Night, morning, it all works for me. Who is that yes. gorgeous voice?
Jessica Alba.
Carl's just dying thinking about her
gosh.
Right now. Thomas, do you share the sentiment?
Fantasy.
Are you fantasizing? What, Carl?
Oh, my gosh.
Let's
Married.
Not go there.
You're
still allowed to think about her. I mean,
yeah
come on, buddy.
God. You are a winner. You have won a date with Jessica Alba. No, I'm just kidding. You won a pair of tickets to the Chicago Flower and Garden Show running March 12th through the 20th, and you can check it out at chicagoflower.com. You have also won a $50 gift card for Bistro Wasabi, two locations, Lake in the Hills, Hoffman Estates. You can check them out and the menu at thebistrowasabi.com. Thomas, thank you so much for calling in and for listening
thank
to
you.
Our show.
Thanks, Thomas.
I love the show.
Oh, thanks,
do.
Buddy.
Thank
thanks
you.
For tuning in. We really appreciate you. Okay, it is time for the Charlie McCarthy Show. And I got to tell you, it's just a mystery to me. I've said this many times, how a ventriloquist could be popular on the radio. But I know you like ventriloquism.
I feel like I'm a ventriloquist at heart.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you have a dummy?
I grew up
besides
with a dummy.
Me?
Besides you. I grew up with a dummy. I'd put him on my arm and
really?
I would. That's what I did. A little geeky, but a lot of fun.
A lot geeky.
Okay.
But that's okay.
It's okay.
I think it's cool. I think every kid growing up should have some kind of hobby.
Yeah.
Lisa's was putting her hand inside a doll. That's okay.
It's a puppet.
Yeah, right. Whatever it is. Mine was collecting classic radio shows.
All right. Well, Charlie, this worked for him. Let's see.
You know? Mine at least led us into a profession of being on the radio at WGN. What did yours do?
We'll take a video and I'll see you my ventriloquism skills.
Stay away from
days.
Me. I'm not going to be your dummy.
You already are.
I'm not even going to think about what
okay.
it would be like to be your dummy.
Okay.
All right. So let's go back to April 11th, 1943. Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy star with special guest Martha Ray. And this was originally sponsored by Chase and Sanborn Coffee. It's heard on NBC. Here's part one of the Charlie McCarthy Show.
The makers of Chase and Sanborn Coffee and Tenderleaf Tea present Edgar Bergen, Ray Noble and his orchestra, Dale Evans, The Sportsman, our guests Martha Ray, Bill Thompson, and Charlie McCarthy.
Dale Evans has a song, and I want you all to hear. She hasn't said so, but I have an idea. She's dedicating it to me. Are you ready, Dale?
Okay, Charlie.
Good. A one, a two, and a three, a go.
You're a shot in the arm. You're a real pepper upper. You're vitamins A to Z. You're a regular blitz, but I find it's good for me. You're a shot in the arm, you're like champagne for supper, a 4th of July display. You're a dip in the sea on a sultry summer day. I'm overflowing to the brim now, and only have you to thank. I'm so darn full of them now. I give gallons and gallons to the Red Cross Bank. When I'm droopy and low, you're a strong cup of coffee. You give me vitality. With your wonderful charm, you're a shot in the arm to me.
Dale, that's beautiful. You know, I didn't think you cared.
As a matter of fact, Charlie, I don't.
Ouch. Then what's the idea of singing that song to me?
Charlie, that song wasn't for you, but here's one that is for you, dear.
Well, that's different. I knew you were only kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hear now one for me.
All right, dear. You're a pain in the neck.
Wow.
You're a real terror downer. To me, you're a perfect frost.
It's getting awful cold in here.
You're a lull in a chat.
Yeah.
How I wish that you'd get lost.
I can take a long walk on a short pier. Good night.
To Bergen and Ray, you may be quite a hero. To me, you are just a droop. You're betwixt and between. You're a lukewarm plate of soup.
Although you think I'm kind of woozy.
That's right. You're a fugitive from Esquire.
Well, Evans, how can you be so choosy?
Well,
I got gallons of gas and 4 new tires.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Well, Charlie, that's different.
I thought so.
Say you're plenty okay. You're a real killer diller.
You change your tune.
That's right. With your gas and your tires, you're a shock in the arm, my friend.
That was your A Shot in the Arm, dedicated to all the boys in boot camp.
Charlie, I want to talk to you.
What have I done now?
Well, nothing at all.
There must be a mistake here someplace.
Yeah. But I just haven't seen much of you the last few days.
Oh.
I missed your handsome face at the breakfast table this morning.
I'm really not handsome. Or am I?
Well, now, that's beside the point. Why didn't you come down for breakfast?
Well, I stayed in bed.
I see.
If I don't get my 16 hours of sleep a night, I'm just no good the next day.
Oh, I see. I think, Charlie, you're just a little bit lazy.
No, I'm not lazy. No, I'm really full of energy. I just don't have the strength to use it.
Oh, I see. Well, that sounds like a touch of spring fever.
Yeah?
Yes.
You think I got it?
Yes. And you know one of the best things to do for spring fever?
Sure.
What?
Nothing. Just let it run its course and enjoy it.
I see.
Bergen, how do we know when it's spring? How do we know, you know, really know? If you got it, if you haven't got it.
Well, there's a difference in the length of the days. Haven't you noticed that?
Yes, come to think of it, I have, yes. It seems to stay early later now.
What's that?
Well, what I mean is it don't get late so early.
What?
I mean, so soon, so quickly.
What?
I don't know what I'm saying. But what I mean is, just what is spring?
What is spring?
No, I asked you first.
All right, yeah. Well, spring begins at the vernal equinox.
Oh, it does,
yes.
Oh, it goes back that far.
Oh, yes. You see, the Earth revolves around its axis.
Down with the axis.
No. No, it has nothing to do. I'm speaking of the rotation of the Earth.
Oh, that.
Yes. Do you know anything about that?
Rotation?
Yes.
Rotation, yes.
All right.
Rotation of the Earth.
That's right.
Every third year, you plant alfalfa.
No.
Yes, you do.
No.
Some do.
I don't care about that. There's no reason for this foolishness, Charlie.
No.
You go to school?
Yes, sir.
Well, you should know about the solar system.
The what?
Solar system.
Yeah?
Yes. Do you know what it is?
No. I hate myself for not knowing, yeah. I feel a perfect cad, yeah. But I will say that once I fell in one.
You fell in one?
Yeah.
In one what?
One of those, yeah. One of those?
One what?
One of those cellar cisterns.
Oh, the solar system is a part of the universe.
Oh, well, what's the universe?
Well, the universe is everything that's known to man and science.
Is that so?
Yes. When you think of the size of the universe, well, it makes us all seem small and insignificant.
Yes, it does, yes. After all, who are we?
Yes.
Especially you. Well,
now, let me see. Where was I?
You were revolving in the universe.
Oh, yes. We were talking about the solar system.
That's right, yeah.
Now, the center of the solar system is, naturally, the sun.
Well, naturally.
Yes. Now, do you know what we receive from the sun?
Light, heat, and freckles.
but it gives us more than that.
You do?
Yes. Just imagine yourself on a desert island.
Yeah?
Yes.
Also, I'm out there now.
Yes. Miles from civilization.
Uh-huh. I'm out there.
Yes, you're out there.
So what?
How would you tell what time it is?
I'd look at my watch.
You'd look at your watch?
Yeah.
But your watch is broken.
Well, that's funny. It was all right a minute ago.
What I mean is you have no watch.
Oh, you snitched it.
No. You have no watch and you're on the island.
Yeah.
How would you tell what time it is?
Well, No. All right, I give up.
You give up?
Yeah. Now let me put you on a desert island.
All right.
How would you tell what time it is?
By the sun.
Oh. Yeah, but there ain't no sun.
Oh, there's no sun. No, well, why isn't there?
Well, it's raining.
Oh, it's raining. Well, I'll wait till it stops raining.
Yeah. Well, it ain't gonna stop raining.
Oh, it's not gonna stop. No, why not?
Because you're standing under a waterfall. Now, wait.
That is sheer stupidity.
Well, it's no worse than you sticking me on a desert island. Robbing me of my watch.
All right, I didn't. Didn't rob you of your watch at all.
Well, then give it back.
I'm trying to tell you about the sun.
All right, Professor Bergen. How far is it to the sun?
Well, roughly speaking...
Well, I don't want any of that rough stuff.
I see.
Give me exactly speaking.
I see.
How far is it to the sun?
Exactly?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's a moot question.
Maybe I should ask Mr. Moot.
No. I'll tell you, the sun is approximately 92 million miles from the Earth.
Is that so?
Yes.
Gee, it's still a wonder that light gets down here at all, isn't it?
Yeah. And just think, Charlie, that light from the sun travels at the rate of 186,000 miles a second.
Yeah?
Now, isn't that remarkable speed?
Oh, I don't know. It's downhill all the way.
Yes.
All right, that's the first portion of the Charlie McCarthy Show from April 11th, 1943, with guest Martha Ray. We'll get back to that in a moment here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, a little disco.
There we go.
A little
Dan
Saturday
knows
night
how to do
here.
It. Get Carl's blood boiling here.
Yeah, you know what? I think Darren Foley, who is with us here, did you remember this movie when it came out, Saturday Night Fever?
Absolutely. I was born that day.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I saw this in the theaters. And Darren is here to tell us about some of the wonderful businesses in the Barrington, Illinois area. We have a couple of minutes to just chat about that before we get back to Charlie McCarthy. Tell us about some of them.
Well, just to get started, I'm going to talk about Grassroots and
okay.
their great music venue. They got Unusual Suspects coming up this weekend. New Orleans music with Crawfish and Hurricanes being served. It's going to be wild.
So wow.
Bring
okay.
it on.
Grassroots. And they have a website, Grassroots?
You just got to find them on...
Oh, Facebook.
Yeah, on Facebook.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
They're eclectic. So.
All right.
Yeah, so another fantastic place over there in Barrington is Vaporworks of Barrington. And if you need and you want to quit smoking, you go see Mike Jacobson, at Vaporworks of Barrington.
Okay, very cool.
Yeah, awesome place. Great place. Great sales, great everything. So anyway... if you need insurance, Carl, like yeah, we talked about last night, and I know you need it.
Yep, I do. I need a lot of insurance.
Yeah, absolutely. So talk to Ryan Mesner. I know he's not in Barrington. He's in Long Grove, but he's a State Farm agent, and he's got the best options available.
All right, definitely we'll do that.
Cool. Okay.
I need insurance because Lisa's tough, man. She is. She threatens my life practically on a daily basis. I want to have some good life insurance. So I'll go to him.
All right. Well, after you get your life insurance, you got to come back to Barrington and you hit Cook Street Coffee.
I go there all the time.
I'm telling you.
Love that place.
Yeah, we met there the other day.
Yeah, Cook
Street.
It was
fun. Yeah.
I love it.
No, yeah. I wasn't invited.
Well, you know.
Next time, Lisa.
Private meeting.
Yeah.
Next time. Hey, you got another one or no?
Yeah, I do. So I know this guy. His name is Billy. Billy Wagner. Uh-huh. His dad has a plumbing warehouse type wholesale place. It's Michael Wagner and Sons Plumbing and Heating Wholesale. And it's a great place. If you're a contractor, you need to call them because they have great specials, great deals all the time.
Right.
And their website is mwsplumbing.com. Check them out. Right. You find out exactly where they're at. You go there. They give you great deals. They're awesome.
Say their name one more time.
Michael Wagner and Sons Plumbing and Heating Wholesale.
All right. Very cool. Yeah. I appreciate it, Darren.
Thank you, Carl. Thank
Great
you,
to
Lisa.
Have you on the show. All right. Those are some of the fine businesses in the Barrington area. Okay, Lisa?
Okay.
I know you don't live in Barrington, but I do, and so does Darren.
Well, even you don't have to live in Barrington to appreciate the services
No,
there.
I know, but I'm going to check out all of those places. Yeah. All right. Let's get back now to this April 11th, 1943 episode of the Charlie McCarthy Show.
Lecturer and world traveler, at the request of most of the countries of the world, is Bill Thompson. Mr. Thompson's most recent travels have taken him through the land of Phlegeria. And while in Phlegeria, Mr. Thompson made some voluminous notes. This evening, he brings us a talk on Phlegeria entitled Notes to You. Bill Thompson.
Good evening, Mr. Thompson.
Good evening, Mr. Bergen, or as we say in Phlegeria,
What does that last word mean?
That wasn't a last word. That was a semicolon.
Uh-huh.
In Phlegeria, you never leave out the punctuation, you see.
I imagine the Phlegerian language is difficult to understand.
Yes, it is, Edgar. And because it's so difficult, many Phlegerians never speak it at all, but instead dictate everything in shorthand and have the girl read it back.
Could you tell us something of the customs of Phlegeria, Bill?
Oh, yes. Contrary to our custom, Groundhog Day is not celebrated in Phlegeria.
Oh, it is not celebrated, I see.
Yes.
Why not?
Well, because the groundhog is their national flower. The groundhog is a very rare flower. It only has petals when it's riding a bicycle. It's extremely rare, seldom if ever seen, if any, you see.
Yeah.
Because even Phlegerians know that people would look awfully silly going around wearing a groundhog in their lapel, wouldn't they? Another interesting custom is based on the fact that the young men of Phlegeria are noted for their kindness to their parents. Every Saturday night, the youth of Phlegeria can be found giving their fathers a bath. This quaint custom is known as sponging off the old man. Oh, and remind me to tell you sometime about Phlegerian music, Edgar.
All right, I will, yeah.
Thanks for reminding me. I'll tell you right now.
Yeah.
The Phlegerians have a very unique instrument similar to our bagpipes, which they call the pumpa.
Pumpa?
Originally, the pumpa was known in Asia as the drool bub.
I don't believe I've ever heard of a drool bub.
Well, the name originated from something a passing ceramic tribesman said when he saw the first pumpa player. The player was playing and chewing tobacco at the same time, a terrific feat. And the tribesman remarked, "Gee, you drool, bub."
Yes, it certainly does. Bill, do you think you could arrange for us to hear a pumper sometime?
No, I don't think. Well, all right. I just happen to have brought one of them with me this evening. Mr. Twist.
Yes, Mr. Thompson.
Would you mind handing me my Phlegerian pipe bag? I mean my Phlegerian bag pipe.
Why, gladly, Mr. Thompson. Gladly. Here you are.
Well, thank you very much. Yes.
That's an odd-looking thing you have there. How does it work, Bill?
Oh, well, first I have to blow it up, Edgar.
I have to blow it up.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Well, give him air, everybody, and stand back. His eyes may pop out. I know.
Yes.
What's the matter with the bagpipe, Bill?
I don't know, but I think a little bicarbonate would help it out. Yeah.
What are you going to play?
Well, I think I'll play a little Fijian folk song called Mravdi Bustevnem Hordivaft, which translated means I'm saving myself for Prosnikov. It's also sometimes called I'll be down to get you in a Brosdink, honey.
You better be ready about half past Prosdiv.
I didn't know you spoke Fijian, Edgar. Well, I better go ahead before I have to pump this thing up again. Anything will happen. Well, here it is, a little Fijian folk song on the Fijian bagpipe.
Yeah.
I'll get it. Just don't worry about it. Don't push me. Don't push me.
To return from your next trip.
But I'm not going anywhere.
Oh, yes, you are, Drulbub.
Huh?
You're going right now.
Oh, that's fine. I can take a hint. I don't have to have a horse kick me in the face.
That can be arranged, too.
Oh.
No matter what we're buying these days, the first question is one of utility. How well will it serve? Tea lovers applying that question to Tenderleaf brand tea balls must have found the answer even beyond their fondest hopes. Because today, when usefulness is so important, Tenderleaf brand tea balls outsell every other kind. They serve so much better because they're superior in every way. They contain finer tea, a blend of the small top tea leaves, the kind you get in Tenderleaf brand tea, put up in packages, too. Either way, you get more delicious tea because the young, tender choice leaves are immeasurably better than the coarse old ones for tempting fragrance and satisfying flavor. And then, too, improved Tenderleaf brand tea balls are made with tasteless filter paper. That's a special paper that filters your tea as you're making it. Only the tea goodness can pass through its meshes into your cup. Enjoy it for breakfast these spring days and with other meals, too. Next time and every time, ask your grocer for Tenderleaf brand tea in packages or in Tenderleaf brand tea balls, largest selling tea balls in America. It was 5.5 months ago that Martha Ray left these shores to sing for our boys over there and to help lighten the burden they're carrying for their country in the most remote corners of the world. In those 5.5 months, Miss Ray has entertained our troops and those of the British and Free French in England, Ireland, Scotland, Gibraltar, the Belgian Congo, and North and South Africa. She returned the other day with 3 decorations, for service overseas and service under fire. She was under bombardment, she was shot at in the air, and once she was temporarily downed by yellow fever. But through it all, she sang for the boys. Now she's back and still singing for the boys. Miss Martha Ray.
Way out in Kansas City on Tuesday, they say that there's a guy they call Pigfoot Pete. He plays piano by ear. Then he plays all night for pig's feet and beer. He's murder on the 88. He's the guy that brought the boogie-woogie up to date. He's got a cannon in his left hand and a rifle in his right. He's just a double-barreled gang. And he'll shoot the 8 beats to you at a frightening rate. He's just a solo. I'll tell you who he is. Pigfoot Pete, a boogie-woogie's elite. His hands are just as big as Virginia hands. And when they go to work, they're like bathroom rams. And when he plays on that box, the joint rocks. Until you'll beat to your socks forever, boogie. He's part of the plan. You'll find a bigger, butter, beat a boogie-woogie man.
You ought to go to Kansas City just to see what the guy can do upon a single key. And if you ask him where he gets the pink idea, he says it's all pig's feet and the right kind of beer.
He's got a cannon,
yeah,
in his left hand,
no,
and a rifle,
wow,
in his right. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo
Mr. Solid Whiz, I'll tell you who he is.
Bigfoot Pete, double gimbal man. Their life back to them, and when it plays on that box, the joint rocks until you'll be to your socks. Wherever Bull Gear is part of the plan, you'll find Bigfoot Pete, the boogie woogie man.
They call him Bigfoot Pete.
Oh, Bigfoot Pete,
the boogie,
my ray of sunshine.
Oh, thank you, Jolly.
Let me be the first to welcome you back from Africa. By the way, when you were in Africa, did you get a good look at General Rommel?
Well, I tell you, Charlie, I sort of got a glimpse of him.
A glimpse of him?
Yeah.
What was he doing?
Putting on his track shoes.
Whoa. Martha, what was the most thrilling experience you had over there?
Well, there was one tall, blonde sergeant.
No.
He was the grandest.
No.
He was so handsome.
Stop. No,
he...
Not that.
I see what you mean. Well, I lost my head.
Fun, isn't it?
Oh, great.
Seriously, Martha, your trip was a real accomplishment, and I think the whole country agrees that you've done a very fine thing.
Well, it was a great trip and a real pleasure, Edgar. You know, those boys of ours over there are the finest in the world. And I'd go back tomorrow if they let me.
There again?
Yes, Charlie.
Tell her about our trip to the Aleutians. No, never mind about that. Well, I'll tell her then. There I was, Martha, knee-deep in glaciers and cinnamon bears. Yum, yum, yum. Those delicious cinnamon bears. Oh, I was hacking my way through ice.
Abbott, hacking?
Yeah, I was had a nasty cough at the time.
Charlie, never mind the illusions.
All right. I'll tell you about my trip to Africa. I was...
Wait a minute, McCarthy.
Camels.
When did you ever go to Africa?
Well, I'll tell you. It was... this is Tuesday.
Were you in Casablanca?
I stop pushing me, will you? Casablanca? I was in the outskirts of it.
I see. How about Tripoli?
The inskirts. No. No, I must confess, I was in the darkest Africa.
Oh, how did you like it?
Oh, I don't know. It was so dark I couldn't see a thing. Spent most of the time stalking lions.
Stalking lions?
Yeah.
Why, you couldn't even stalk celery.
Kick it off. Africa, how I love that view. I know it backwards.
Yeah, that's just the way you're describing it, backwards.
You know, Martha, you and I ought to go to Africa together sometime. Wouldn't it be romantic?
What do you mean, romantic?
Well, just think. You could be a desert princess.
Oh, yes, I'm such a pretty little thing, I am.
And I could be a wealthy American who comes and rescues you.
See? Oh, yes, but remember, Charles, you are of the West.
Yes.
And I am of the East.
Wheels.
And never the twain shall meet.
Well, never mind the twain. We'll travel the trailer.
Well, never mind the trailer. We'll go by dromedary.
So those two intrepid travelers, Way and McCarthy, ride off on the trade route from Hubalaba to Babaluba and back to Hubalaba again.
Up and down. I think my camel's got the hiccups.
What's the matter, Charlie? Having trouble with your camel?
Well, I don't know. This desert station wagon with the bumpy skyline is giving me a headache. See, what are camels descended from? Horses or zebras?
Well, don't let it get around, Charlie.
No.
They're really giraffes with dumplings. And of course, we natives call them ships of the desert.
Oh, do we?
Yeah.
Well, I'm getting seasick of them anyway. Oh, this headache.
Well, maybe if you change camels, you'd feel better.
Do you think so, my dear? My desert flower and my hummingbird.
Oh, yes, my love. Just wait, and I shall call the camel changer.
Do.
me, Ahmed Bey. I'm at the service of the flower of the desert.
What are you doing?
Ahmed! Playing the flute with one hand.
Why only one hand?
So I can hold my nose with the other.
Charlie, this is our new camel caretaker, Ahmed Bey.
I knew a fellow in Cairo by the name of Bey. He was a big fat fella.
Ah, yes. That's my brother, Eli Bey.
Come on, stay, Ahmed, old boy. Would you do something for Mr. McCarthy? You know, he has a nasty headache, he has.
I am.
Do not worry. I can fix that with a native herb.
Would you please?
Say, Herb, give this guy an aspirin, will you?
Oh, well, come on now. We better move on. We do it hooba la. Wait, a quarter to Hocus Pocus.
Egad, is it that late already? How far is it to hooba la ba slobba la ba la ba? I knew we'd have
trouble with it. Oh, I should stay 3 days as a sand flies.
Oh, yes, those sand flies, yeah. Say nothing of those sand fleas. Ouch! Little rascals, they get
you. I do not want to alarm you, but that notorious bandit, Arlie Ben Bergen, is on the loose again.
Oh, not Arlie Ben Bergen!
Yes!
Fear not, I'll handle him.
Oh, you're so brave, you are. You're so brave. You know, you're afraid of nothing.
That's right. I am afraid of nothing. Of course, if it comes to something, that's different.
Well, there's really nothing to worry about now. Arlie Ben Bergen isn't within miles of here, if I'm not mistaken. All right, so I'm mistaken. So what?
It's too late now. Here he comes.
Stand your sleigh out, or I'll shoot you by yump and yimini.
No, please, Bergen, no. No, you did that last week, Bergen. That's enough. You did it last week.
Yeah, but I got laughs, though.
Give him an inch and he thinks he's an actor.
Oh, pardon me. I'm sorry.
Now, go on out and come in the right way. As an Arab.
All right. Stand right where you are, or I'll let you have both barrels. I've got you covered with a sawed-off shotgun. Oh, darn it.
What's the matter?
I sawed off the wrong end.
Oh, Ben Ollie. You know, you may be a bandit, but you sure are handsome, you are.
Oh, thank you, miss. Tonight I shall rob all the men and kiss all the women.
You can't do that.
Quiet, you grade 3 mop handle. Man, let him run this robbery his own way, will you? Oh, come on. Kiss me Arabian fool.
Oh, you are a pretty thing.
Oh, you say such nice things, and I'm so tired of it all.
Oh. Very well, I shall kiss you.
Oh, yes.
How did you like that?
You better go back and get the Swede.
And that's the Charlie McCarthy Show, going back to April 11th, 1943, with special guest Martha Ray. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.